Okay, we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order now. It is 5:30 p.m. And we'll do a roll call. Marty, and go ahead and just acknowledge that you're here by saying aye. Marty Gator.
President accounted for. Oh, I'm sorry, aye.
Marianne Nolte.
I am here.
Mike Eister.
Here.
Amy Covich.
Here.
Greg Evans. Philip Shimyu, and pardon me if I pronounce names incorrectly. Leonard Storr. Leah Roush, pardon me.
Here.
Thank you. Pete Knox.
Aye.
And Susan Cox. Okay. Thank you. Preliminary remarks from the chair. There's a couple things I wanted to bring up that we can capture for discussion today or at the next meeting. There's been discussion about considering merging the CATC with the SPC as we have similar objectives. That's a Comprehensive and Accessible Transportation Committee. That's a committee that there are other folks on this meeting that might be on as well. So we can talk a little bit more about that, just thinking about how we can work a little bit more collaboratively. And also recognizing that while this meeting is recorded, it would be helpful to have to capture the SPC recommendations, perhaps in the agenda or in another way so that we can reflect when we're looking at the notes. So if there's a very specific recommendation that we have, being able to capture that somewhere else, maybe that follows on this agenda with each agenda. So we can talk a little bit more about that as well. That came up from a community member who reached out to the SPC to make that recommendation so they'd know what decisions were made or what recommendations were being made to go forward. So I'm not sure if that's how the preliminary remarks for the chair work, but that's just a place I wanted to add that in since that has come up since we last chatted.
So
yes.
What action is likely to happen with the CAPC and SPC? Is there going to be discussion of that?
I think we're thinking about talking with our team to see if that's something we should explore when they have their next meeting coming up, seeing if they'd be interested in exploring that. And then kind of after, if SPC feels like that might be something to explore, they feel that that might be something to explore, then we can talk as two committees talking together.
Great.
Tom?
Well, at the appropriate time on that, Mike, I'm happy to give some of the context as to why we're thinking this.
Good.
Thanks. I just wanted to make sure we got that. I'm not sure just bring that up and to put on future agenda.
I was going to actually say, is that something I can enter as a motion that we go ahead and propose that we add that to the agenda next time for discussion?
Yes. Yeah. I'd like to put that on the agenda for next time we meet. So. Let's put the merging of SPC and CATC.
I think I need a second. Don't I need a second? Doesn't somebody have to second me?
Can I turn to Camille, but I don't think you need a motion for.
Oh, okay, cool.
Agenda. We've got it. We're going to make sure it's on the agenda.
Perfect. Thank you. So we'll make sure to add that to the agenda. Thanks for clarifying, Tom. We're just Robert's Rules of Order. And so just let me know when. What's appropriate, what's not appropriate. Appreciate that.
I've got Camille here, so it's not Tom's Rules of Order.
Thank you. And I believe
Camille's Rules of Order.
I'd like to make note that Susan has joined us as well. And so Camille, being able to capture that. Okay. Anything to add to the agenda from folks? For this agenda, not for future agendas? Okay. Audience participation, Camille.
I am not showing anyone indicating that they would like to join us on the other screen.
Okay, perfect. So we can skip through that section completely. Great, awesome. Lovely. All right, so moving on to items for the agenda today, we have Andrew joining us to talk about mobility management strategy updates.
So thanks, and can you bring Jeremy in? Jeremy Card, another development planner here at LTD, is going to be helping me out. And so we don't have a presentation We actually just really wanted to facilitate a discussion with you all. We had provided some materials in the packet, but I guess just going back just a little bit for anyone out there who's joining us for the first time, maybe they're out there on the internet. So the mobility management strategy, we kicked this off about a year ago, and it's really LTV getting organized around kind of how we engage with partnerships and with modes that we haven't traditionally operated. You know, we've been doing the 40-foot and 60-foot bus for a long time. We've got the BRT thing nailed down. But the question is, I think, what do we do about everything else? And we're, I think, feeling that just because it's not a traditional bus doesn't mean we don't have some role in it. What that role is, though, is a big open question. And so that's what the mobility management strategy is really about. It's about how do we engage with those things. And we've developed a number of products. You've probably seen me present, if you've been following along the project, about different roles that we've developed. And so today we wanted to talk about three more deliverables that we've been working with our consultants on that kind of really are going to help as we're putting the strategy together. So we're hoping to be done by the end of the year. So lots more to come on this soon. We've done a lot of background research. We've done case studies, talked with other agencies. We've done community outreach. And right now we're trying to synthesize all of that into our final products. And so really today, I want to just go through the three deliverables that we put in the packet. Those are kind of a summary of the case studies that we did. A document that one of our consultants put together on microtransit or mobility on demand and how that can be used as a tool. We have some experience with that, but our consultants put together some information for us to think about how we might deploy that in the future. And finally, we did kind of a data-driven and also community input-driven needs analysis to take a look at where we might start making investments if you know we have the resources, partnerships, money lined up. And it's a great time because Tom's going to talk about STIF afterwards. And so now is a great time to think about if we were going to make investments because there is potentially, if you know, we apply for STIF money to think about making some investments and trying out some new services. So really good timing on this. Excited to get your feedback. So with that, I'm going to stop talking and I want you all to start talking and give us feedback. So I know we have some people visually. I don't know, Camille, if you can help me kind of keep track of.
Yes, if I see any hands go up virtually, I will let you
know. Yeah, and so I guess just getting started, if you want to talk about the case studies, I have some notes here on some takeaways that I have, but I also don't want to waste everyone's time presenting on work if we don't need to. And so I guess just to start out with, did any of the case studies jump out at anyone as particularly relevant to LTD? We talked with a lot of agencies. Some of them were quite a bit bigger, but LTD's always punched above our weight in kind of what we're doing for the community. And so I think they're pretty good case studies, but really just curious kind of first reactions, if anybody had any comments kind of broadly, and then maybe thinking about how we might apply the kind of learnings from that to LTD. Did anything stand out to you?
Should I just speak up?
Yes. Yeah, Barty, sorry, didn't notice your hand there.
And I actually read through these all and I love them. I think they're very well laid out. The only suggestion that I would add, and I do see that you've got someone from the adaptive and accessible community, which is great. I would wonder from a visual standpoint, how the reach would be. Let me also ask another question. Is this internal or external for documentation?
The document that you're looking at is maybe a mixture of both.
Okay.
I would say that we're in the process of putting together the kind of strategy, the mobility management strategy out of all these building blocks we've been working on over the last year. And so there's definitely an opportunity to reformat things. And this is kind of a summary document, but it's not internal only. It's not a secret, but when we're using this in our strategy, we're going to make it look nice. We're going to put it together in a cohesive way.
I would just recommend, and this is something that, when I used to work in marketing and advertising way back in the day, I would always throw the card out thinking, think about the whole broad audience of who's going to be looking at something like this. And is what you're putting out representative of that audience? So what I don't see is I don't see representatives of the Latino community. I don't see any of the African-American community. I don't see the Asian community. I don't see, you know, any of the diverse communities that we have that LTD serves. And I think that might be something to think about. I'm not saying it's something you have to do, but if there's any imaging that would relate to that, I would strongly say it's probably a good suggestion to think about that moving forward, just to go along with some of these case studies, because literally I know how some folks are. If they pick up something and there's no one like them in the pictures, they're not gonna read it.
Definitely great feedback. We will make sure to incorporate that kind of in our external facing communication.
But it's great information. Aside from that, I love it, it's great.
Anybody else initial comments or thoughts or I guess, did any of the case studies stand out to you as an agency tackling a problem that you think is really urgent that LTD is facing?
Okay, I admit it. I didn't read the case studies. And I don't see them attached to the packet. It must have been electronic.
So in support of our sustainability and transitioning electronically, I have not been printing all of the packet material unless we're specifically requested a special request. They were all sent electronically.
Okay.
Well, I didn't
look at it.
That's so, okay, sorry. Mike. Let me, I guess, structure this in a way where we can talk about some of the themes. And then if you have like an initial reaction to kind of our takeaways, I'll say some of the case studies had more technical things, right? How do these agencies structure their internal staff? And I don't think that's an SPC question. I think that's a question for, you know, our directors group or Jameson Otten, who will be coming on as our new general manager, right? That's really their role to structure staff. But one of the big, I think, takeaways for me when we're thinking about applying this was kind of the problem that agencies are trying to solve. And in different ways, I would say, you know, the case studies we looked at trying to solve spatial gaps. And so by that, I mean, there's a place where service doesn't go today. There are a couple of agencies doing that in different ways in kind of a suburban context where they've got fixed route service that isn't, you know, traditionally productive enough because of the, you know, it's on the edge of town. And I feel like, you know, we probably have areas of town that aren't served today. I know that to be true, actually. Rural areas as well. So this can be a tool that you can deploy in areas where fixed route service will never make sense because the, you know, there's just not that many people there. It's rural. That's what rural space is. It's not a lot of people. The other way some agencies are looking at this is to fill in, we call them specialized services gaps. And so a great example of this could be San Joaquin RTD doing something kind of like what LTD does with our ride source brokerage, where they've got they're integrating eligibility, travel training, and all of that into like one service. And they're doing that for the region. We don't have a lot of regional partners, but we do it outside of our district a little bit. And so we're already doing that, but they're doing it on a much bigger scale. A different example would be Pinellas Suncoast, which is in Florida. And they've done a lot of work using transportation network companies like Lyft and Uber. And they're doing two different things with that. One, they are using that to make their paratransit service better by allowing people to take TNCs and trying to eliminate the need to schedule ahead of time. And so they're working on a specific group of people who have specific needs and using these tools only for that. They're also using it to cover like gaps in late night. So they had a program where low income workers could apply. And basically if transit's not running when you want to go home, you can take an Uber home because, you know, we're not running the bus. And so they're using it in two different ways, but we call them specialized service gaps because they're really focused and not meant for the broader public. And so I guess my question to you all would be, you know, does either one of those make more sense to you? Do both of them make sense at all? You know, can you think of other ways that we should be thinking about this? But also, I mean, do you see where we're at right now as an agency? Is one of these needs in our community bigger than the other? When we're thinking about, I think both of them make sense, but is one of them more urgent? Does it make more sense for LTD as we're structured, as you see it?
Martin, real quick, sorry, go ahead, Mike.
Well, it does seem like, and I don't have data to back this up, but I assume that there are numbers of people that get off of work at times when the buses aren't running. And I don't know how many, and I don't know what they're currently doing to get to and from work, but that seems like a place where there might be a gap. And I assume some of those would be clustered like around hospitals or big manufacturing or, you know, Brian's Bakery probably runs around the clock. I don't know how many people they have clocking in and out at 2 o'clock in the morning, but that seems like an area where there might be a gap. I don't know.
And later when we get to the needs assessment piece, that is one thing we found. We kind of broke out how we're serving different actual segments, right? So not just how many jobs are we close to, but how many low income jobs are we close to, how many moderate income jobs are we close to, how many, and how close are they? And one of the you know, gaps that we have is we know kind of where those jobs are, but we don't know when they're getting off. And so that's a data gap for us, mm-hmm. not just us, but it's a data gap in commonly available data sets.
I see Marty's hand and then Mary Ann.
I'm sorry, my hand is still up from the last question.
I wasn't sure of that, but I wanted to make sure. Mary Ann, go ahead.
Thanks, Andrew, for the more context. I guess I would say as far as gaps go, I think the time gap is a real thing that, you know, bus service doesn't run super late and having more options for people at different hours of the day is important. I also think there's kind of a spatial gap that, like, for instance, I work at the Delta campus for Lane County. In order to get there, it would require 2 buses. So right now it's easier for me to just ride my bike. But if I can't ride my bike, then there's not really a transit way to get there. And so I think also dedicating some resources to figuring out better connectivity as a whole, I think would help too. And maybe that's outside the scope of this, but it's, I don't know, something I see pretty regularly is that, are we focusing, do we want the bus system to be kind of a last resort, or do we want it to be broadly functional for everybody? I don't know, that's sort of a underpinning question for me.
Mike, go ahead.
Sort of along those lines, I remember in various committees I've served on over the years, the discussion about how to get people to an MX line so that they can take advantage of MX. And remember when I was on the board at that time, we were talking about running circulator buses that would connect people to the MX line. So sort of along the lines of what Mary Ann was talking about, how do we, are there ways that we can promote more utility of our service?
Definitely. And we'll keep thinking about this, because we're going to keep talking about it as we go through the documents, because that is I think that's a big focus area for us. It's not all of the things that we're doing should build upon the things we're already doing, right? We don't need to invent a new transit system that works alongside of our existing one. We need to make our existing system work better. And that's really what we're trying to think about, how to use these tools to do that.
Leah, go ahead.
Yeah. So Andrew, I think you spoke to the Pinellas TNC program a little bit as an example. That is a case study that I don't particularly warm to for our community. I don't know if anyone's tried to get like a Lyft or Uber in town recently, but there's not a lot of them, and they're way more expensive than they used to be. And it seems to be something that maybe would have been a good solution in the lab like 2 or 3 years ago, but maybe is less feasible now. and also tends to put maybe more cars on the road. So I don't have a lot of good information data to back that up, but that is one that doesn't necessarily resonate with me as a good solution for you, our metro area.
Thanks, appreciate the feedback. Anything else on the case studies? Don't want to cut you all off, but I think this goes in well. Talking about, so there's another document that was attached to the packet, looking at microtransit, or what we call mobility on demand. Both those terms are used in the industry. Locally, we call it mobility on demand, and it's really, you know, flexible routed service, and it's not necessarily transportation network companies, right? But it's us going door to door for customers and doing so in a way that kind of is digitally powered, so that it's not like our ride source where you have to call ahead a day, and it's really trying to be more responsive to folks. And so I guess just to preview a little bit, because I know packet issues. So we asked our consultants, we're working with VIA, who's actually our technology provider for our mobility on demand. They also have a consulting arm that's working with us on kind of how we might think about using this. It's a tool that we've used locally to try and fill in gaps. The Cottage Grove Connect, the LTD connector in Cottage Grove is a great example, I think, of us being successful at finding a way to really create some connections in an area of our district where we, you know, the fixed route bus service didn't meet a lot of people's needs, and the connector fills in a gap there. It's not perfect, right? Every service that we put out has pros and cons, but it is filling a big gap for people who live in Cottage Grove. So we said, how can we think about applying this elsewhere? What does that look like? Where is this a good tool? How should we think about using it? They're thinking, you know, partially based on case studies, their experience in other communities, really leads towards, I think, three main kind of use cases. And those are first and last mile connections to fixed route transit, which is something Mike brought up and others were discussing, that if we have frequent transit lines, it works a little bit less well with not frequent transit. So if we have those frequent transit lines out there like the MX, you know, can we be feeding people to our stations with that? Another way to use it would be coverage expansion. So actually kind of going out to new places, kind of like we did in Cottage Grove. They had really minimal service during non-peak times. And so really expanding to new areas. The final one would be kind of a little variation on that, really thinking about how we use this when the fixed route transit network isn't operating as much. And so thinking about it as a replacement or an addition in off-peak hours. And so there are routes that we have that don't run as late in the evening, or they run very infrequently late in the evening. And so either using microtransit or mobility on demand as a first mile, last mile to get you to a route that's still running, you know, later in the evening, or running more frequently later in the evening, or, you know, if that route is just not in the area at all, you know, using this as a just an evening or morning or whenever we're not running service type of fill in the gap. And so we had put out our consultants developed some, I would call them illustrative examples of how these might be applied. But before we talk about that, do these kind of use cases make sense to you? Are any of those, I think, when you think about the problems that we face in getting people to our system, getting close enough to people, are these useful tools? Do some of these make more sense to you than others? Any general feedback?
Mike, go ahead.
I guess when I think about it, I think about the effort or the effort that we made to provide service to the airport. You know, apparently ended up costing more than if we had just paid for cab rides for people. So that seemed like a good idea, because you would think that a lot of people would be needing rides to the airport and from the airport. But for some reason, we might as well have just hired a cab company and paid them to do it. So I don't know where the lines cross, where the there's a cost benefit analysis, where there's enough economy of scale to make something like this work, I guess is my question.
Yeah, I think it depends, right? Any proposal that we're talking about, right? It depends, right? Because what is the cost? And then we can start to look at the benefit and the cost benefit. We're trying to grapple with this as like a bigger picture thing. Like, why would we use these tools as opposed to, for instance, fixed route transit, or in your example, just paying for, if that's really something we value, it's cheaper to just buy cabs. So maybe we should just buy cabs. Maybe that's not a good idea for us to do. Maybe we work with someone, you know, right? As an example, right? Right tool for the right job. We're trying to figure out, when is this the right tool? A lot of details like what you're describing matter, whether we should do it or not, or whether we can afford it.
Well, the reason I thought of that particular example, because it seems like if any example would demonstrate that it could work, that would be one, but it didn't. I don't know if times have changed now, or, you know, if there's some circumstance that caused it to not work then that might work now, but that seems like an obvious example. Even if we just built it around the schedule of when flights come in and out, which of course does add a complication for whoever's scheduling drivers and equipment. But it seemed like if that one didn't work, what's the likelihood of some of these less obvious ones working, I guess is what I'm scratching my head about.
But I would just say that's why we do pilots.
Yeah.
And I'll say the airport pilot, we learn, and we get that request a lot, actually, still to this day. I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
But we know, right? We tried it out, and we know that that was, at least the way it was configured, the way it was at that time, it didn't work. I would say our pilot in Cottage Grove has been really successful. It's got high ridership, all the numbers you look at, and when you talk to the riders, it's filling a need in the community. And so I'll say pilots sometimes fail, and we need the space as an agency to fail sometimes. Sure. But that's something that will be in the strategy, is try it out before you buy too much of it.
Leah?
Yeah, a couple of questions. So Andrew, you asked if, I think your question was whether those kind of types categories make sense. And I'm looking at the candidate zones, microtransit zones by type, that map. Is that kind of what you're referring to in your explanation?
I think feedback more generally about the types, about whether, those examples in there, I want to be super clear with members of the public. We're not like proposing any specific thing right now. We asked our consultants, like, if you looked at our map, they did a kind of data-driven analysis where they said, there are enough people here, it's far enough away from transit. If you, you know, had the ability to try it, these are zones that make sense. Those are not the only zones that make sense. Those are not necessarily going to be successful. I just want to be clear about that we're not, those aren't project proposals, but just thinking about kind of our system and the way that we're set up. We're looking for feedback. Maybe not on whether you do a first mile, last mile version in what your neighborhood of choice, but does first mile, last mile make sense in the way that we're thinking about it? Would it be better in a lot of instances to just provide micro mobility or put the fixed route there because you don't think that first mile, last mile is a good use of micro trend? That's the kind of feedback I think.
Yeah, no, and I guess I asked about the map because there's a fourth type on here called pre-scheduled that I don't see kind of described, and I didn't hear you say, but is that just generally identifying like a zone where people can pre-schedule?
Yeah, I'll say I didn't talk about that as much because a lot of it is focused on, our consultants were thinking about how this could be applied outside of our service area as well. So the pre-scheduled is really thinking about in very rural areas. It's just because there are less people doesn't mean those people don't have needs. And so to the extent that you would try to use this to meet their needs, right? A fixed route bus, a 40 foot bus is not gonna make sense going to many of the very small unincorporated communities in our county, which mostly are outside of our district. But if LTD or someone was looking for ways to serve those communities, kind of a fourth type that I didn't mention, a pre-scheduled service, which kind of honestly looks a lot like our Dial-A-Ride or like, our Ride Source Dial-A-Ride or South Lane Wheels, actually goes outside of Cottage Grove and offers a similar service. So there are examples of that in our community, but that's, most of that would be focused outside of LTD's district. So I was trying to focus on the more in-district things, but if you have mm-hmm. feedback on that, it is on the table.
Okay. And then my second question is about the Cottage Grove connector. Is that mostly commuters? Like, do you know who is taking that, who we're getting the positive feedback from? Maybe I should know that, but I don't know that much about that.
I can jump in on that one. I've been called the resident expert on our mobility on demand. But so Cottage Grove, the mobility on demand there, it ranges. When we initially set up the pilot, it was based off, we discontinued the loops of the fixed route through Cottage Grove. So we were forcing commuters to use that service to get to our bus. It worked. It didn't work great. We changed that model just before the pandemic hit. But as far as riders, we're seeing a lot of elderly folks. We're seeing some young folks. The initial survey data that we had from the first half, that first kind of 12-month pilot, there was actually more younger people than older folks using it. So in their 20s, 30s, you know what I mean? So we're not seeing, it's not geared towards one in particular group that we're seeing ride it. They are using it for a lot of inter-community trips. So like just around town, getting back and forth to run their errands, their appointments, things like that. So it's serving a broad audience in Cottage Grove, and ridership is trending back up after the pandemic, and we're actually looking at possibly, you know, maybe adding service on that with our STIP applications, I believe.
Okay, thank you. I think overall of those types, I think that kind of connection extension, coverage extension, I think you called it, and then the first mile, last mile are certainly intriguing. And I feel like first mile, last mile is something we've talked a lot about. And I know you haven't gotten here yet, but some of the, I guess, data, the needs assessment, looking at the number of people that are within that kind of 3 mile area of frequent transit service. I feel like there's a lot of people, a lot of community members that could fit into that niche of needing that first mile, last mile service.
Thanks, Leo. Go ahead, Amy.
Just a few comments, thoughts feeding off of others and what they've mentioned. I'm thinking, I guess, more about distinct population groups and also kind of areas to focus investment and resources. So this is not really part of the conversation, but, I think Marianne brought up the need to kind of invest in our core service and improving core service through increased hours, better connectivity. I'm thinking about two different types of folks, right? You have a population group that maybe could take the bus, but they have the resources to not take the bus if it's not convenient to them, right? And then you have other folks that don't have that option. You know, they can't afford a car. And then there's another population group, folks that have mobility challenges. So maybe they can take the bus, but they're a little too far away. They can't walk or, you know, bike to connect. So I think, you know, improving, there's room to improve core service to incentivize, encourage folks that can make that choice to say, yes, I want to take the bus because it runs during the times that I need it. I can connect to it relatively easy, even if that means getting on my bike and, you know, just riding a little bit to connect the bus, but I can count on it, right? So I'm willing to give up my vehicle or, you know, make that part of my routine. I feel like with this conversation and the, you know, mobility management, focusing on those folks that don't have the ability to make that choice, right? They don't have the resources to be able to afford a car. Housing is getting more expensive, so they might not even be able to find a place to live that's near the bus, even if they want to, right? So giving people the opportunity, giving people options, a lifeline to connect to transit and transportation, I think is really important. And also serving folks that have those mobility challenges, right? Where they, they need a little extra support. That's where I think maybe these investments would be most worthwhile. And then, like Mike was saying, just looking, exploring different strategies for delivering that service cost effectively, right? Like what type of vehicles, does LTD provide that service themselves, or is it hiring a company and bidding out a contract for another company to deliver that service if they can do it more cost effectively? So those are my thoughts.
Thanks, Amy. I think my opinion is very similar. If you are focusing on the folks that are the most in need, then everyone else will be able to get what they need. And I think that was kind of the part of this conversation is like, is LTD on the right path with these proposals, right? Looking at the big picture. I want to bring up something real quick and be really thoughtful about this, recognizing how important this particular conversation is and that we had some file issues earlier that maybe not the entire SPC hasn't been able to look at all the files. Andrew, I want to be thoughtful about our time. If we need some more time to look at these proposals and make sure LTD is on the right path with what, make sure nothing is missing from this conversation, is there time to make sure that the SPC has looked at this so we can have and I think we've had a meaningful conversation, but I want to make sure we haven't missed out on folks making sure they've had a chance to look at the materials. So one question I want to look at is our timing on this. Do we have what we need as a SPC do we need to look at the materials again and have this conversation at the next meeting that we have or at another meeting? That's one question I have. Or do you all feel comfortable that you, for the conversation that Andrew has given us, for those of us who maybe haven't looked at the materials, do we have what we need to think about? Are we missing any material, anything? Is anything missing out of these proposals that we have? Sorry if that's muddy. I just want to make sure we have, do we feel confident with what we've discussed today? Maybe not having everyone look through all these documents, because I want to be thoughtful about that. Are we comfortable having a conversation about knowing if we are on the right track or if we're missing anything from these proposals? Marty, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Is it safe to say I'm asking you directly, Andrew, since you're only looking for discussion at this point, not a recommendation, that is something that's not going to mess up your timetable if that was something that happened, if there was a motion to let people have just a little more time to look at the documents? I know I had made a comment before about even a possibility of how these documents are distributed to us, like relabeling a little bit so I know how they all go together, how they all lay out, how they all tie together, might help a little too. Would that slow you guys down if we were to do that?
Yeah, I think we can totally bring this up again. I mean, this isn't the last conversation. I will say we're kind of, particularly if I don't know what our next meeting schedule is, but if we're doing a lot of stiff conversations, there might be an opportunity. So we can definitely keep talking about this. There's nothing I think today in the discussion, like all the feedback you can give us is great, but we're not done. And I would say that the mobility management strategy isn't really about, like it's not a plan. Right? Plan, you're at condition A and you're moving towards what you believe you want to be at, which is condition B. And here are all the steps in between. And this is not that. It's a strategy, right? And we're going to show you some other work we've been doing in just a few minutes. But like I said, we're not done. And even when we're done with our strategy, right, it's not super prescriptive. And so a lot of the things you're bringing up are things that we're going to continue to do, right? This is not a magic wand we wave at it and we say, oh, we understand what to do in all scenarios now, right? It's really setting us up to have really good discussions about it and to have better understandings of kind of how we might use some tools. There's no magic answer on is this better than that, right? We're going to keep coming back to you year after year, as long as you're on this committee, to talk about these issues, because they're tricky. So yes, we can bring this up at future meetings before anything's finalized. We're not looking for a recommendation tonight. And I promise you, we will be talking about it again, whether it's on the next agenda or in a year from now.
Thanks, Andrew. Leah?
Yeah, I don't know if it's that beneficial to like kick this specific conversation down the road. I think it's good to know that we're going to continue this conversation. I think what would help me personally to be more effective in these meetings is if we do have, you know, we had like 60 pages of these technical reports, which is great. There's good information, but I'm probably never going to be able to thoughtfully read 60 pages in advance of the meeting, just realistically. So I think having very like clear questions or critical points of like, this is what we're looking for discussion around versus kind of our general feelings on it helps me to come more prepared for these meetings.
Thank you, Leah. I think that's a good, I want to be very thoughtful about Andrew's time though, because we have another piece to go into, but I would like to see if we can have a little time to kind of discuss that, to say what specifically would be helpful for the SPC. Because Marty and I, as the chairs, are meeting with the team to talk about how we can structure these meetings so that they are more helpful for the team. And I recognize that everyone is different about consuming information. So wanting to make sure we are being accessible to all folks, we will look at how to do that better. So thank you for that, Leah. Okay, sure. Moving on to the next piece.
So I got two things that we can move through pretty quickly because we also have STIF to talk about tonight. And that's a whole big other thing. Because I think we're going to be talking about this more in the future, I'll just make this one kind of short. And maybe it's more of an ask for you all to get to Leah's point. So we did this needs assessment. The idea behind this is that we did community outreach. We asked people, where are your barriers and gaps, right? It's not a representative sample. It's not intended to be exhaustive. But we went out and we asked people, we said, you know, are you even interested in LTD thinking about other things? And we heard a lot of people say, you know, LTD should be investing in the bus. And I want to be super clear, just because we're talking about things that aren't the bus does not mean we're not thinking, but Tom's going to give you a very healthy number of stiff money we want to invest in the regular 40-foot bus. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other tools. And so we asked people, you know, what do you think? Where are your gaps? And we also fed a bunch of kind of dry, boring census data in, right? How close? And so my ask to you, and if you did this, I'll take your feedback now, or we can talk about it at a future meeting, or you can email me. But we took a look and we said, where are we at with our transit service? Who are we close to? And I think Leah brought it up. We looked at how many people are within, you know, a quarter to a half mile of different types of service, because that matters too, right? So if you're a quarter mile from MX, you have a lot more service than if you're a quarter mile from, you know, the route that goes up Mackenzie Bridge, right? Those are pretty different experiences. And so we broke that out, and we also looked at where there are jobs. Jobs we use because there's good data. Not that everyone's going to work. That's not the only point of our system, but it is a good proxy because people work where you go shopping. People work at the hospital, people work at your doctor's office. So it's a pretty good proxy for like, how close are we to other stuff that's not just your house? We broke all that out and we have it by different categories, different groups, looking for feedback really on like, should we be focused on, is there anyone we're missing? Are there other ways that we should be thinking about this? We can't always break anything out. But there are good comparisons of kind of like who has what kind of service. One of the big takeaways was something that Leah brought up, which was that a lot of people live a little bit outside of walking distance. They don't live that far, right? I think it's over 70% of the county population lives within 3 miles of one of our buses, but not within a quarter mile, right? Not the 70% includes people who live within a quarter mile. We reach a lot of people, but there are a lot of people that are just a little too far outside, which is part of why we're having this conversation. And so really just looking for feedback on kind of how we did that analysis. Are there other lenses we should be using? So I'll take that feedback today, or if we want to talk about it later after everyone can digest that question, really happy to come back at your next meeting or whenever you have time for me.
I'll just jump in real quick. I really appreciated how this was laid out. And I think kind of, again, to Talia's point about like, if I had more time, would like to like kind of do the overlay of, but again, that's your jobs and you are the experts in that, but kind of the overlay of the strategies with the folks that kind of to what Amy was sharing, who are the folks that are, that need the most for the transportation and are not able to access it the most, right? So kind of cross-pollinating those pieces. So, but I do like the material because I feel like this is giving us clarity on that roadmap. No pun intended there, clarity on the roadmap that we need to take to be able to support folks. So yeah, I just really appreciated being able to see this data pulled out this way. And then I got really distracted looking at the data. And then I was like, I need more time to look at this. So just appreciate that, being able to see this all together. Leah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll echo that. It's helpful to see all the data. It's hard to digest that many tables and like come away with anything meaningful, but I think there was some good findings in here. In terms of kind of what you looked at and how you approached it, there from like the data side of me, there are a couple of things in here that I think are kind of unreliable data sets from census. So like people without computers, people without internet, even sometimes people without households gets really unreliable, especially when we get down to like census tracts. So I like hesitate to put that data out there and make a lot of decisions based on it, just based on like what we know about the census. But I think the other groups you have called out are important. I noticed there's a kind of language in here around did not observe any noticeable difference in transit access for youth, people of color, households without motor vehicles. You know, especially I think youth and people of color, I think they are priority populations, regardless of if there's any differences in the data. So calling them out regardless might be beneficial as we get to more of a public process point. I think to Marty's earlier point, people will be looking for that as readers, even if there's not a big difference in the data. But I think outside of that, you know, the groups you're looking at make sense. The focus on commuters and jobs is great. And I was a little bit surprised actually by some of the data that's in here around the percentage of our community that is in that 0.5 mile to 3 mile versus in less than a 0.5 mile. It's a high number when you go up to 3 miles, but 3 miles is pretty far for most people. Marianne and I are going to bike, but a lot of other people aren't. So I wonder if even breaking that range down a little bit further to think more about like a mile or even up to 2 miles might be more realistic in terms of how far people are willing to travel. But overall, great information.
Thanks, Leah. Tom?
I was just going to follow up again around process. And I heard some good comments about the process, and I'm wondering, we'll follow up at the staff level, but generally, you know, we're all trying to do something new and different here, and I appreciate the conversation, and I'm hoping we can kind of dig into this a little bit more, but we can try to also, I'm thinking about how we can focus the agenda item summaries and the materials that we attach in a way that helps you. And I think part of it is, I picked up some of the commentary, but you know, if you have key questions, we'd like to try and frame those questions in the materials that we prepare. And so, you know, all of us can be thinking about, you know, how can we better, I mean, this stuff left by itself has a technical aspect to it. how do we break that down in a way that, that gets at some of the questions that you might have? And also, you know, if we're doing our jobs, what kind of questions are coming up for you based on the material that you're getting? And that, that can help us again. You know, this kind of thing is probably going to be a multi meeting discussion. So it's always, if after you leave the meeting tonight and you have questions, you know, get them to us and we'll focus, help us better focus the materials for next time.
Go ahead, Mike.
I'd just like to say, I appreciate the effort of the staff to try to make this balance between how do we get input from this group, knowing that we have limited amounts of time to absorb the information we need to give you the input. And I see you making a real effort to try to be sensitive to that. And I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I think kind of on that note, thinking about that agenda, the agenda and my opening remarks about being able to talk about things that we're bringing forward. And again, I know that there's a structure on the agenda and I know Robert rules and order of order and everything, but however we can frame that so that we know coming into this meeting, we're going to follow up on that question. Maybe we can embed that into the agenda too. So as we're thinking about the materials, and again, SPC does have a responsibility to make sure we're coming to the meeting, having read the materials. So we'll make sure that however we want to capture that and that everyone has access to the materials, we will come prepared with that information, but also being able to look at the agenda to see what the prompts that we're going to bring up so that we can come and be able to respond. Like for example, thinking about the conversation Leah shared with, we don't want more cars on the road with like utilizing Uber and Lyft, but it's like, if there's like a couple year plan to like get people to utilize Lyft and Uber to be able to access the bus, then maybe if you're all thinking about grants that you can apply for some other type of monies that come in and can supplement that or can, you know, reduce using Lyft and Uber, like I'd like to know about that kind of thing. What could this help us be able to piggyback on for more money to be able to invest in electric vehicles that are going to help us do that? So those are the kind of things that I want to like, what are we doing now that's going to have this bigger effect longer term? And I think that's what you're looking at, Andrew, for this. Are we on the right path of the strategy that we're trying to take? So we will also commit to making sure we're coming to letting Camille know if we're having struggles getting the materials so that we can come prepared. And also we do appreciate that the staff is going to try to get us what we need in a consumable manner as well. So I don't go down a rabbit hole looking at data and then miss out on other materials that you've provided for us.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. Jeremy and I were gonna present, we've been talking about, right, the heart of this mobility management strategy is there are some other things that we're going to bring to you in future meetings. But the real heart of this thing is I call it a decision-making framework, but it's really a way to have a structured conversation. And I think that's been really abstract for this committee, but also for everyone who's not been a staff member. And we've actually been kind of testing it on some questions. And I don't think we have time to really get into it today. But since you were gracious enough to invite me back to your next meeting to keep the conversation going, I think we can do that. And I'll just preview it and say, you know, a lot of it is technical, right? Like I don't expect SPC to be able to give us feedback on, you know, what a proposed project does in terms of grant compliance, right? That's a question for our grants folks. And it's really a question for us whether we can deal with that increased compliance. But I think there's, we're going to come back and I want to find a way to write it in the EIS, but I want to know if kind of the way we're talking about it is useful to you in terms of like the language that we're using and the way that we're structuring the conversation, because I think there's probably an abbreviated way for us when we are asking you for feedback about these kind of tricky mobility management questions. If we're looking at it through our framework, there's probably an abbreviated version of that that can help you have a structured conversation too about the things you can give us input on, right? About your values, about whether something kind of makes sense to you for LTD to do. So let that be like the preview of our next conversation, and we'll try and develop the materials with that in mind. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. All right, next we have our STIF update and discussion.
Yeah, thanks. And I'm going to have Cosette join? You want to join me? I think that'll help us coordinate better. And what we want to do tonight is provide you with an overview of some of you have been through this cycle a couple of times before. This is the third cycle for the distribution of state transportation improvement funds, or STIF, or we call it STIF funds. And we've been able to make a lot of good use of these funds over the last two cycles, but this cycle, because of being outside of the pandemic and all the things that really made it difficult for us to add service, we're in a position in this cycle to make some significant improvements to our service, as well as a number of things that STIF can help provide with respect to buses and other programs. And so we want to go over that tonight. We want to kind of give you the broad view of how we're thinking. And given the timelines, there's a very tight timeline. ODOT didn't start the process until, you know, we didn't have the applications until recently. And this is the schedule part of this. We have to have the board make their decision at their work session on January 4th. And so there's a lot of work to do between now and then with respect to the applications. Some of you have been aware of this process, know that what this group will be doing is making a recommendation directly to the board on LTD's applications. We have the state process that sets up another committee, the STIF Advisory Committee. Alma's going to serve on that committee. Our two board members also, Pete and Caitlin will be serving on the STIF Advisory Committee. That group is going to make a recommendation to the board about the entire set of applications. So not just LTDs, but we'll get one probably from Eugene, LCOG, are there others? It was just those Southland Wheels possibly. But there'll be other applications from other agencies, and their job, the STIF Advisory Committee's job, is to make a recommendation to the board on that entire plan. So you understand the distinctions between what we're asking you to do and what that broader committee will do. So tonight, what we want to do, like I said, is go over potential projects that we are considering. And just give you that background, have answer any questions you might have about the program. We're interested, as you start to digest this material, what your priorities might be, how you might think about priorities, because that's really going to help us. Right now, just as context, you'll see, I don't know if you can bring that table up, we'll be speaking from that a lot tonight. We are looking at identifying a whole wide range of needs. And at this point, based on the work that we've done so far, we have a need that exceeds the amount that we expect to have available. And so not only do we need to prioritize and reduce our current thoughts of the potential projects, but we also have to consider that there are going to be other people applying for worthwhile projects as well. So, what we want to do is go over a little bit of the context of the program itself and then dive into where we're at today. And Chris, I don't know if you want to pick up from there.
Yeah, I just want to, I think that the conversation that Andrew led us through before this sets us up very well for this conversation. So the STIF funds, or the Statewide Transportation Improvement Funds, although it's STIF as an acronym, they're actually very flexible funds. And they allow us to do a lot of what you were all talking about in terms of priorities in the last conversation. So things like investing in core service that increases hours and connectivity, first and last mile services, and universal access. So some of the projects that you're going to see tonight that LTD is bringing forward continue and build on a lot of the good work that we've done in previous biennium and just that LTD does in general. Again, I just want to talk a little bit again about the STIF funds. So the STIF funds, and I know that you all got some information in your packet,
And it was pretty easy reading, so hopefully that went well. But the STIF program was created to create increased access, increased mobility. It was created to help provide equity in transportation, and it was created to reduce barriers. Really, it was created a significant amount of money and a significant investment, a historical investment to create transformation in transportation. And that transformation, you know, we can see it in other ways in our communities in terms of improving the quality of life, improving the economy of our communities. So there's a lot of great things that we can do with this funding. Again, because of COVID, because of supply chain, because of a lot of circumstances, a lot of the programs that were planned in previous biennium and the current biennium were put on hold. So we have a bit of a backlog in addition to what we're going to get for the next funding. So on the other hand, though, what we also are committed to is investing in service that accomplishes those goals. And so what you're going to see tonight, as Tom mentioned, is a pretty aggressive proposal that's going to need to be fine-tuned, because we know we're already asking for more money than we have there today. We also have other advisory committees who we're working with. So again, LTD is both a public transportation service provider. So we're going to be applying for our own projects. We're also the qualified entity, which means that LTD is tasked by ODOT to be the coordinator and the facilitator of these funds for our region, so the whole county. So again, the role of SPC is really to look at LTD's projects that we're applying for as a public transportation service provider. So, and again, we have a very tight timeline, so much appreciate that. So I'll turn it back over to you.
So, and as we talked just before this, if you have questions, go ahead and ask them as we're going through this. What I'm going to describe, what we've done here is develop a list of projects, again, that we feel are needed. This reflects our need for this kind of funding. And in addition, as you have questions, go ahead and ask them, because I think that'll be the best way. But I'm going to start with just go through these projects briefly. We have actually the second row there, the added fixed route service. Our desire, again, coming out of the pandemic and kind of into where we're at today, we really want to be aggressive in terms of adding service to the community. So that fixed route service is what we do best. It's what we want to do more of. And in that context, then there are, so think about our fixed route service in terms of a couple of different things. Within the metro area, we have the frequent transit network. That's the major corridors in town, where our ultimate desire, as laid out in our long range transit plan, is to provide frequency at 15 minutes or better for most of the day. And ultimately, this is a big goal, 7 days a week. And so we've got a ways to go in that regard, but still we wanna start by looking at how we can add service to our frequent transit network. As well, we have a network of coverage, what we call coverage service. It's a little bit lower frequency, but it still connects people to vital services, education, social needs, et cetera. So we wanna kind of make that as robust as we can relative to the resources we have. So outside of the metro area, we provide valuable service to the outlying cities within the district. And so that's just starting at the top, Junction City, Bonita, Cresswell and Cottage Grove, Lowell and Coburg. I think I hit them all. That are in the district. And we want to look at, that service has generally been what we would characterize as a commuter level of service. The STIF funds allow us to make it even more useful for the populations in those outlying areas. And so we'll be looking at ways to do that and add more service, like in the middle of the day, for example. So that's the kind of fixed route service that we operate within the district. In addition, we have established services in Florence, the Rhodey Express, as well as a connection between the Eugene Springfield area and Oak Ridge, which is the Diamond Express. And we'll talk about those are services that we oversee, contract for, and we'll be looking for funding to support and expand those services as well. And so to start with, again, the ADA paratransit service would be something that we would invest in the Cottage Grove, Creswell area as we add service to fixed route service to that those communities. The sustainable service reserve, I think in particular the board members might be aware, but we've talked to this committee in the past about this. We have a service reserve for our regular, for the general fund service that we provide. This program allows us to set up a reserve for services started under these funds. And so that's Christina Hsu, our financial director, has a process, a methodology for establishing what a sustainable service reserve would look like for these funds. And so we're still working with her on that. That's why there's no dollar value there, but we'll come back with that. Let me just talk about the service ads and maybe you can touch on some of the other things. The Cottage Grove Connector, you heard in the last agenda item, is a mobility on demand pilot that we established 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And it's been very successful. And so what we're looking for stiff funding for there is to continue that service. And perhaps explore expanding it outside. Right now, it's just the city limits of Cottage Grove, but we're looking to expand that with that. We've also put money in prospectively, looking at what our next pilot might be for mobility on demand. Just a quick digression into the history. We actually, the Cottage Grove mobility on demand was our first such pilot looking at how this might work. And that came out of the availability of some technology that could be made, that was going to be made available to us free if we started up this mobility on demand. So that's how we got into this. But as we were looking at Cottage Grove, we were also looking at you know, might there be other outlying areas that might benefit from MOD? But also, and this is something that we want to spend more time on, you know, how might mobility on demand be deployed in the metro area? And so we'd be looking at areas, and I'll just say, so you can kind of get a more concrete idea of how we're thinking about things. If you're familiar with the kind of the North Delta area where River Ridge Golf Course used to be and all that, now that's all development. And on the west side, there's a lot of apartment buildings, a lot of good density from a transit standpoint, and a good housing density on the other side of the street. That's a good area for looking at mobility on demand. It's not, it's far enough away from our regular service that it'd be difficult to justify sending a 40-foot bus up there. But this is the type of thing that might serve to increase the accessibility that those residents have to the services that are out, and could also connect to our transit service. So that's just an example. We're gonna go through a more thorough look at what that might be, but that's what that pilot money is for that we're asking for. We're looking at expanding the Ride Source shopper service. And maybe you can speak to the success of that service.
Sure, so we're operating the Ride Source shopper service, which is primarily for older adults and people with disabilities. It's an opportunity for us to go out. We send a vehicle out. It's an accessible vehicle. We send it out to a neighborhood. People call ahead and reserve their spot. We go out and we pick folks up. We take them to a local grocery store, Safeways, Walmarts, Albertsons, Fred Meyers. We drop them off. They do their shopping. While they're doing their shopping, we go to another neighborhood. We pick up folks and we take them to another store. Then we come back to this store, pick everyone up, deliver them back. And then we go pick up the folks in the first stores. And then we take them back to the neighborhood. And it's been wildly successful for a lot of reasons. First of all, it provides a regular opportunity for people to get out and they can pick up their prescription at most of those places. They can do their grocery shopping. And I think that, you know, they're appreciating having access to fresh fruits and vegetables and other things that they don't necessarily always have access to. It's also a bit of a social outing. So it gives them an opportunity to get out at least once a week and visit with their community. So there's some community building and some good social opportunities as well. Again, it's been wildly successful. We just relaunched that after COVID. What we know is before COVID hit, we had several neighborhoods that we weren't able to serve with one vehicle. So we actually have waiting lists of people who wanted to take the service to get to and from those grocery stores and those department stores. So this proposal would add a second vehicle. It would allow us to potentially provide service to neighborhoods at least twice a week so that we could serve more people and again, provide them that access. In addition, it does help us because for a lot of these trips, these would be one-off trips. So these would be folks taking a ride source vehicle to a grocery store and then back. So we would be dispatching a small vehicle to their location and getting them where they need to go. Again, that's a more expensive way for us to deliver the service. And they also, I think, miss out on kind of that regular opportunity to get out and that opportunity for some socialization, which also is great.
So that covers, because I mentioned the vehicle expansion and replacement. So we've got basically those vehicles are 200,000.
Sure. So the first year we would be expanding. So that first vehicle, that first $200,000 in fiscal year 24 would be purchasing a second vehicle. And then the vehicle that we currently have is aging. So the second vehicle in fiscal year 25 would be a replacement for that first vehicle that we already have.
So you can look at the size of the numbers here and you can see, so we've got the service there. We're looking to use $13 million of STIF to add service. But the other big ticket item is actually related to vehicle replacement for both the specialized services vehicles, as well as the fixed route. And with respect to the specialized services vehicles, you can see those numbers. That represents the full cost of those vehicles. However, it's in the title there, for fixed route replacement, we're leveraging STIF funds at 25% to meet a federal fund match. So that's also a good investment. Again, you can see this is a regular thing. So STIF is a good source of that funding. Then you want to talk about their programs?
Sure. So Tom, could I ask the Phil Barnhart question?
Yeah.
On the replacement vehicles, how are we doing with electric?
We should have Matt come and give a more detailed explanation. However, you might be familiar, the board set a goal for, was it 30 electric vehicles? And I believe we haven't accepted all 30 as I understand it, but we're getting really close. And so we're faster than what the board had expected. So we think.
And we are evaluating as we're looking at purchasing vehicles. So for instance, the rights for a shopper vehicle, that could be a good potential vehicle for something like an electric vehicle. So. And to some extent, it does depend on what those vehicles are doing. So rides or shopper, for instance, is a candidate for electric.
Thanks.
But I'd like to add to, and maybe we'll hear from Phil on this, but one of the things that we're realizing is we may be at the right level of electrification of fleet. Right now, the technology is such that it doesn't get the same mileage as our other buses. So think about, my service planners are trying to figure out how to fit the electric vehicles in. They have to pull them out before they would normally. So we're looking at how we can kind of continue to invest in those. And of course, if you aren't familiar with it, we are using renewable diesel on our buses, and so that's made for cleaner burning. And I think we're just over time, as the technologies advance, we're going to invest more in that, and it's just kind of where we're at.
Thanks.
Thought I'd take the opportunity to tell more of the story. So yeah, you can see those are big ticket items, and then you're going to talk about the paraprograms. Yes.
So we have our K-12 program. So that's a program that provides a bus pass to anyone enrolled in a K-12 program, including homeschool and other alternative schools in Lane County. It provides them access on LTD Unlimited on our fixed route system. So that's a really important program. So we used to have many years ago, when I first started 26 plus years ago, we had a student transit pass. And what we know is that having opportunities for kids to experience using the bus, number one, sets them up to being open to using the bus as they get older. And they're more likely to become bus riders when they get older. It also provides them access. So it provides them access to after school activities. It provides them access to jobs. It provides them access to services. It really does help to relieve the family burden for transportation, as well as provide opportunities for our youth to have access to some healthy activities. So that's the K-12 student program. And then we also have our low income fare program. So LTD partners with nonprofits in our area to provide passes to people who are low income. We are not experts in that area, nor do we necessarily have access or do people have accessibility to us for these programs. So, but they do to the nonprofits. So many of the nonprofits are well-placed. They already are working with folks who would qualify for those passes. So what LTD does is we provide those passes at basically a 75% discount to the different nonprofits in the communities. And then they give those bus passes to people. And it could be a single ride bus pass. It could be a day ride, a day pass, or it could be a monthly pass. So again, we let them case manage that. They're in the best position to know their clients and to know the clientele, and they case manage it. This really does, from my perspective, create equity. It creates access and it creates opportunity. I think that's a really important program. It's one that our board has adopted. I think it's just a really great program. So the next one is integrated fare validation. So LTD, as many of you know, we've purchased the UMO fare collection system. So that's an electronic fare collection system. You can use a tap card or you can use a mobile app to board the bus. What we're looking to do with this is really kind of trying to create that transformational experience where it's seamless for folks. So first of all, we need to add that to our MX system, because right now we're not validating fares on our MX system. So that would give us an opportunity to do that. But also looking to expand that to other programs and other services. So making that available on our RideSource service. So today you need to pay or have a ticket, cash or have a ticket to board our RideSource ADA paratransit service. This would just be an extension. I think it's easier for folks to use, or at least for many folks, to use a tap card to tap. And then really though, looking at other programs. So our Mobility on Demand, our Diamond Express that operates in Oak Ridge, and our Rodi Express in Florence, incorporating the electronic fare collection system. So it's a one fare to kind of rule them all. We've also had conversations, and we have interest from Link Lane, who operates from Eugene to Florence and Florence to Yahat. So adding that to their service, really looking to add it onto many other services. Also, what we know is we've been talking to other regional transportation coordinators around the state, and there's other parts of the state who are looking at electronic fare collection. And how great would it be for you to be able to get on a bus in Grants Pass using your UMO system fare card without having to download a separate app and put money into a separate stored value wallet. So this would begin to make that transition and that integration.
So then STIF program allows for us to put funding in for the administration of the program. And there's a lot there's a lot of intense effort in just putting the applications together themselves. But then there's the managing of the program, the various projects, multiple agencies. And we can recover some of the cost of administering. As part of that, just so you know, we also have a contract with LCOG to help us administer. And if you've been part of the STIF advisory committee, you know that Kate Wilson from LCOG is managing that process for us. And so it's really helpful to have them on board to do that. So the next item is also connected to the out-of-district projects. And that is, so DX means Diamond Express, and you'll see something that says RX there, that's Rhodey Express. So for the Diamond Express, we have, in fact, LCOGS, if you're familiar with LCOGS, Florence to Eugene, Link Lane service, that operates partly in district and part of out of district. So does the Diamond Express. So the Diamond Express runs from downtown Eugene over to Oak Ridge. And so the part that runs in district, we can actually get out of the in district pot. And then you'll see there's out of district pays for the rest of the vehicle. And so we've been doing it that way. And that's how LCOG does it. It's a good way to pay for these vehicles. So getting into the out of district services, again, it's primarily contractual service for the Rhodey Express and for the Diamond Express. Those are the things that we operate outside of our district through contracts. And again, the rest of the cost of the out-of-district bus replacement to Diamond Express is there. We're looking at expanding Rhodey Express. So you see both service expansion for $220,000 and an additional bus for $130,000. For the Diamond Express, we've been working with them, with that service over the years. And we're with Oak Ridge, there's interest in a fourth trip. We operate three trips a day now. We want to pilot the need for that. We sense that there is a need that the community would like to see that service. So we're going to put that out there as a pilot. Also looking at Saturday service. If you are a bike rider, you know, Oak Ridge is a good place to bike, and Andrew would speak for a long time about that, I think. But that would be a service that would provide some weekend connection between Oak Ridge and downtown, as well as kind of on going back out. I'll be taking some biking tourists. In addition to the service reserve that we established for our regular service, we also have had a service reserve in place for the out-of-district service. So taken together, we have out-of-district and in-district, but there's also another broad categorization of services. And do you want to talk a little bit about specialized services? And actually, we can ask Camille to scroll down further. There's the outline of keep going. That's it. I'm sorry. Yeah, that was great.
So since the last biennium, ODOT has in the legislature, or OTC has consolidated what was our special transportation fund. So if that's not confusing enough, that we now have special transportation fund, which is STF, combined into a statewide transportation improvement fund, which is STIF. It's all going to be STIF now. But it's important that we bring those programs forward. They're important programs. They specifically address services and needs of older adults and people with disabilities. For many years, it's been a very small amount of funding that's available. It hasn't grown. It's been stagnant. And as you know, costs go up. So we are tasked with doing more for less and making some really tough choices. Personally, I'm really happy to see these programs come under a broader and larger opportunity for funding life of their funds, because these are great programs and it gives them an opportunity to grow. I'm just gonna walk through really quick some of these programs. So the vehicle maintenance, that's just the maintenance for the vehicles that we support, the mobility on demand vehicles. We support vehicles for Southland Wheels for their operations. We support our own ride source vehicles and then all of the rural service vehicles. So that provides the preventive maintenance for that. I'm gonna skip down a little bit and not go through every one of these. But again, I mentioned that we partner with the community a lot. So a lot of these programs are partnering with the community. LTD can't do it all by ourselves, but we can support other organizations who are already doing this by providing some funding and leveraging their expertise and allowing them to leverage our funding to do more. So behavioral health is a really good example. So this is a program where we contract with Whitebird to provide really transportation to support people often who are in crisis. So that could be transportation within our area. It could even be transportation outside of our area. So for instance, if someone is having a crisis in our area and their network, their support network is in Seattle, we might actually help provide them transportation to get them back to the support network. So it's a really important kind of gap funding that couldn't be provided in a different way. And speaking of gap funding, we have Crucial Connections and Veterans Transportation. These are generally just small amounts of money. Crucial Connections, we make available for people to apply for funding. What we know is that there's people who don't qualify for any of the programs that we typically have. So they kind of fall in the middle and don't qualify for transportation programs. But who may have an emergent need for instance, medical needs. And one example of that is someone who had broken their leg. They lived in Coburg. They were able to get transportation to get their leg treated, but they needed a couple of follow-up appointments. And because it wasn't emergent, but it did need to happen, they didn't have anyone else available to help provide transportation to those appointments. So we were able to provide just a few trips for that person through the Crucial Connections. And again, that's a partnership. We partner with other agencies like Senior and Disability Services who typically bring us potential clients who might have need. Veterans Transportation, this is transportation to help veterans in our community go to the veterans organizations to apply for benefits and access their benefits, as well as provide them trips to and from the clinic and the hospital as well. We also provide some support for preschool transportation. This is a Pearl Buck preschool program. These are individuals who have disabilities and are likely using our Ride Source service, but who need to get their children to and from this preschool program. And so we have three vehicles that we outfit. We go around and pick up these kids and take them to the preschool and then take them home. So again, they're not individual trips, and it helps to ensure those kids that they're getting a little extra help before they actually go into regular school. And then I'm gonna skip down to travel training and transit host. These are programs that we partner with Alternative Work Concepts, who is a nonprofit in our community. They work with people who have disabilities. And they help us to support people with disabilities to use our fixed route system. So they do travel training. It's one-on-one training. They'll shadow people. They're available at no cost to help people learn how to use our system and then to support them to continue using our system. And then we have our transit host program. So one of the things that we realize is because we're a hub and spoke system where we bring people into the Eugene station or the Springfield station, making a connection can be the barrier that keeps people from using our fixed route service and then makes them a paratransit user. We want to help people to be as independent as possible. So we contract with Alternative Work Concepts, who has two folks down at the Eugene station. We've had off and on, we've had people at the Springfield station, and they have people who they're scheduled to go and greet at one bus and make sure they get to the next bus. And then they're also on the platform just to answer general questions.
been a very successful program. And then we do transportation eligibility assessments. So our RightSource call center, our RightSource brokerage, we operate and support about 14 different programs through that one call center. And what we need, what we do is we do an in-person eligibility assessment. So again, we don't do this ourselves. We partner with Senior Disability Services, Whitebird Clinic, and Alternative Work Concepts. And if someone's interested in using one of the programs at the RightSource call center, we'll schedule an in-person assessment. And what that enables us to do is to go out and meet with someone in their own environment to really know what their transportation needs are, because we want to make sure that it's a good fit. And one of the reasons that we partner with those agencies is because those agencies can also be looking for other support services that those individuals might benefit from. So again, it's a win-win opportunity. And then for the Florence and Oak Ridge services, we get some formula funding for those. And this would just, yes. And this would just provide a match that enables those programs to continue, as well as Oak Ridge and Florence both provide their own match.
So let's, can we go back up to the, just the bottom line or the table there? So, and first of all, I have to say that I hadn't seen this broad list of services that we provide until recently, and I'm amazed at the different dimensions of service that we provide in the communities that we are able to serve in with respect to this program. So it's an amazing range of programs. So getting to the bottom line there, you can see our total ask is approximately, let me get down here myself, $33.4 million. And as you can see, the estimated amount, including approximately $17 million for this cycle, and we have $14 million in, again, Cosette described this, we have money that wasn't spent in the past bienniums, whether it's, for example, in this current cycle we're in, had a number of vehicles that we were gonna purchase. And you may have heard this more broadly in the economy, but we're affected by supply chain issues. And so some of the buses that we expected to have delivered to us in this cycle by the end of this fiscal year, looks like close, they're gonna be moved to, we're hoping to the latter half of 23, but that's a new plan here. So that's why you're seeing the some of this stuff as carryover. And so this is where we're at. And we're gonna look to you in the successive meetings that we have on this to help us establish the priorities for LTD as an agency. And that's the plan we're gonna put together for ourselves and then get that into the STIF advisory committee, who's gonna be advising the board on the total package. So like that's a lot of I know, one direction information, but we thought it was really critical for you to see the variety of needs that we have and the scale of the need that we have. We're gonna have to set some priorities though. And that's what we're gonna be looking to you to help us do in the future. So I'd be interested, first of all, any reactions to the program, and then also think about ways in which we can help you next time.
I have Marianne has her hand up. So Marianne, go ahead. Thank you for that. Also, thank you for going through that with us. Marianne, go ahead.
Thanks, Alma. And thank you, Cosette and Tom. That's very informative and it's nice to see everything broken out. Just a question. I know, Tom, you had mentioned at the beginning that it's going to be kind of a competitive pool this year. if not all of the funding from STIF comes through, does that mean that some of these things will be not funded, and so the like service expansions and those sorts of things just wouldn't be options? Just want to understand that.
Yeah, so a couple things, maybe a little deeper dive into the funding. So again, it's a payroll tax. The legislature passed, I believe it was 2017. It's not to get too much into the nuance, our regular payroll tax is a tax on the employer. The legislature passed this as a tax on the employee. So all of us that earn paychecks in Oregon pay a very small amount, but it adds up, that feeds this program. And then the just so you know, that the money is distributed by the state based on how much, for example, Lane County workers paid into it. So we get to spend the money that we in essence is kind of stays in the county. So there's that piece of it. So what I'm getting to, Marianne, is that what we're working on is a projection from ODOT as to how much they expect to be generated over the next 2 years. And that's money that that's where we got the understanding of kind of how much we'd be working with in terms of the 17 million. And that's just to reemphasize, that's a biennium. So roughly half and half each year. So 17. So $8.5 million each year in the coming 2 year cycle. So in the context of this would apply to our employer taxes as well. If there's a recession or something that really dampens the amount of payroll tax generated in Lane County, that's all we get. And so, that hasn't happened that often, but when it does, we have to make decisions on what our priorities are going to be to move forward. And so if we had to have that conversation, actually it'd probably be in the middle of the cycle, because we wouldn't really know. You know, at this point, things look pretty good, actually, in terms of what we expect to generate over the next couple of years. But the process would be, we'd have to go back and go through a process with the other applicants. And then obviously, this group, SPC, would certainly weigh in. We'd probably have to reconvene the STIF advisory committee. And ultimately, it's a board decision as to how to reconcile those funds. So that's kind of maybe a long-winded answer, but it's a relatively complex process. Did that get at what you're asking for?
Yes, absolutely. Thanks very much, Tom.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
So Tom, my recollection is in the past, we've sort of built some flexibility into some of these projects as well, knowing that there's no way to predict now what's going to be happening 2 years from now.
Right. Yeah, and I would add, you're just raising another issue. That what we're talking about there is kind of how the revenue comes to us.
Yeah.
You also know, as a board member, that sometimes the costs are different, right, than what we thought when we were doing the planning. So, yeah, all those things need to be balanced throughout the cycle.
And it seems to have worked the last two cycles. Huh?
Yeah.
So, again, just for my clarification, since I'm new-ish to the stuff. So this is a projection from ODOT. We have 33.4 million as a projection of what's going to be coming in.
There's 17 million for the next two, that'll be generated the next 2 years. We also have 14 million approximately of backlog, unspent funds.
But I guess what I'm saying is, like, because we were talking about this is an aggressive proposal, like this is aggressive. So the task for the SPC is part of this to say, if we don't, is that what we're looking at? If we don't get these dollars in, are we helping kind of look at where we could cut or adjust? Or I just want to know kind of very specific what the charge is for the SPC.
Yeah, that's probably a way to look at it. But ultimately, we want to get from you your sense of priorities, mm-hmm, on these things, so that we can actually, the first job is to get down to what we know we're going to have available. And then I think we also want to understand. So what we'd like to do is come back to you. You know, we'll do a lot of work internally to try and get that 2.4 million overage there reduced.
I see. Okay. My apologies.
Okay. Does that
yeah,
help? I should have led with that.
No, you're totally fine. That's helpful for me to be like, okay, because I'm like, this is great. I would love all of these things, but understanding that. So yeah, you have an aggressive proposal. You're going to try to carve and shave down so that we can have that difference be zero, but still also hitting as many of these, and we're going to make our recommendation on what we feel the priority areas are.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And again, the way that wraps up then is we're going to see, we're not sure exactly what others are going to apply for.
Yeah.
So we'll probably come back to you and talk more about priorities as well, but ultimately we're going to have to give the board as the qualified entity something to adopt that's like a balanced budget.
Absolutely. So on that note, that recommendation to the board is going to look at this on January 4th. So we are going to need to look at some meetings for our team. So
we have some ideas.
Yeah, for that. Totally. Just wanted to.
So what we're proposing is that you consider meeting on the 1st of November and the 29th of November. And again, that first meeting would be bringing you back some more descriptive, and we'll have worked out hopefully how we're going to fit within the budget ourselves, and then get your priorities, and we'll try and structure that. And again, that would be a good conversation now if you want to talk about how some ways in which you might think about setting priorities. But otherwise, we can come back and we can do a facilitated conversation with you about how to do that. But that would happen. We probably have that conversation on the 1st, and then on the 29th, that's where we'd look for your official formal board recommendation.
Okay. Committee, do you have any feedback or responses to that proposal of meeting on the 1st of November or the 29th? I see a thumbs up from Mike. I see head nodding from Amy. All right, perfect. thumbs up from majority of folks. So yes, let's go ahead and get those on the calendar for the team. And anything between now and then that we can be looking at, let us know. Okay.
I also just want to mention that, so we know that this comes every 2 years, and it's been a compressed timeline. So we are actually looking out beyond this current biennium.
Nice.
So what we know is that you'll see that there's some kind of one-time expenditures, but then there's also programs that we're putting in place that we want to make sure that they're sustainable, that we're not putting them out only to lose that funding 2 years later to a different priority. So we're putting together a staff level advisory committee. So we're involving staff from other agencies, the city, the county, and LCOG to have conversations about the plans that we're putting together and how we could potentially leverage this funding to help accomplish some of those plans, and also to help us have dialogue with you all about your priorities for the next biennium. And in giving us an opportunity to come and provide a report mid-year, and again, with really kind of directing that toward decisions that are going to come at the next biennium, so that we're not having this conversation in such a compressed timeline. I also think, again, I just want to refer back to Andrew. I mean, some of the pieces that he's talking about fit in, again, to future biennium projects. So I think if we're just keeping all of this kind of coming together and in alignment, that we can do really great things.
Kind of like a strategic planning structure. Go so yeah, thank you. Wonderful. Are there any other comments or questions from the committee? All right. Seeing that, appreciate staff for pulling this together. Appreciate your time, Andrew, Tom, and that from everyone. I guess right now we will be able to adjourn the meeting at 7:16. Okay. Thank you.
You rock, Elma. Just check you out, giving us back, 14, 15 minutes.
Trying to. Thanks for everyone. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
See y'all.